This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Memorial Day is this coming weekend, and in many respects, that marks the unofficial, at least unofficial, start of the summer travel season. 3.4 million people are expected to fly over the holiday weekend, according to AAA. They'll have to be prepared for perhaps the least exciting part of traveling by air, airport security, and the long lines that often go with it over busy travel seasons. What those passengers won't need to have to fly domestically, at least for now, is a real ID. In other words, a state driver's license or ID card that is also a federally accepted form of identification. The requirement to have a real ID to board domestic flights was supposed to go into effect just weeks ago, and years before that, and before that, and before that. But back in December, the federal government once again extended the deadline, this time out to May 2025. It is, again, not the first delay for a program that was originally passed into law back in 2005. To talk more about real IDs, what they are, what purpose they're meant to serve, we're joined now by Sheldon H. Jacobson. He's a professor of computer science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He's won awards for his research on airport security. Sheldon, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
And listeners, if you have questions about real ID or anything else relating to air travel, let us know at 800-222-9455. Have you gotten your real ID yet? What was the process like? I got mine. I'd love to hear your experience. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Sheldon, so what makes a real ID different from, say, a standard, non-real Illinois driver's license?
Well, the validation process is much more rigorous. Physically, it will look almost the same, except in Illinois, it will have a star associated with it. You'll see a star in a corner. But besides that, you have to establish who you are beyond a shadow of a doubt. It could be your residency, and it requires your full social security number and being able to prove that these belong to you. So it is much more onerous than simply going and taking an eye test and getting your driver's license. It requires much more validation. And that's why it was in fact passed back in 2005 by the 911 Commission, 9/11 Commission, because it is actually a critical part of security in our nation for people to be validated to who they are. And this is why going into a federal facility, a military base, or traveling by air, you would require a real ID. The problem is it keeps getting delayed. So as a result of that, we start asking, how seriously are people taking this? And my own view is they have to take it seriously, because the most important type of security we have is validating who a person is, and real ID tries to achieve that.
All right, there's a lot to unpack there, as we say on public radio. So let's start with the documentation and what it actually takes to get a real ID. You mentioned, you know, proving you are the person who is actually holding this Social Security card, that you're entitled to it. How does that actually work? What sort of documentation do you need to get? And, you know, maybe we can talk about what barriers that can put up for people.
Sure. Well, it could involve a birth certificate, a validated certified birth certificate. It could involve your passport or a passport card, for example, something that establishes that you are who you are. Now, you don't have to be a citizen of the United States, but you have to be legally here, which means that there is documentation for you to be, in fact, legally in the United States. And this documentation, everyone who is legally here has it. If someone does not have it, then, of course, they can't provide that and they can't get a real ID. So in some sense, the Real ID Act was a circuitous way to look at immigration reform. And people didn't really look at it that way, but it's turning out that way, because once the Real ID Act is put into effect, and if you want to travel by plane and you don't have a real ID, you cannot take a commercial airplane. That will be, in fact, in some sense, a real hindrance, a headwind to people who aren't here legally. So that's one aspect.
And to be clear, not everybody needs a real ID, right?
It's a question of what you're going to try and do in society. If you want to travel commercially, you're going to need a real ID. Now, if you have a passport, you've already provided much of that information, which means a passport would suffice. If you're a member of Global Entry, that would also suffice. But these are very rigorous processes to validate that you are, in fact, in the country legally. You'll also need a social security number, but you have to prove it's your social security number. So you have to have a social security card. And then residency, you have to somehow establish that you in fact live in the country or in Illinois, live in Illinois. It could be a bank statement. It could be an insurance policy if you're a homeowner or a renter. It could be some kind of pension statement, anything that will prove that you are who you are. And lastly, your signature. You know, are you signing the person that you claim to be? All of these collectively form layers of security that will determine that you are the person you claim to be. And the Real ID will, in fact, add that level of security to federal facilities, but also to air travel. And that's why it's so important, because anything we can do to harden these systems, these locations, without making it intrusive on people except for information, is in fact valuable.
So you mentioned that this is one of the more important aspects of aviation security. Why is that? And maybe you can, this came out of the 9/11 Commission, right? This was a recommendation that they had?
Absolutely. People who are what I'll call bad actors with intent to cause harm in the United States, the last thing they want to know, they want is to be known, to become known to anybody. They want to maintain their anonymity and be as invisible as possible. If you're forcing people to, in some sense, out themselves in their identity, what you're doing is you're creating a level of security. You know, I've argued that facial recognition, which is in fact something that the TSA is starting to use, is a tremendously important level of security, a layer of security. And in fact, with it, we can weaken some of the physical security aspects. And this is very counterintuitive, but our research points out that if you know the traveler is far more likely to be safe and not cause harm as opposed to someone who is unknown. And the Real ID makes you a known person to airports, to the commercial airline system, to federal facilities, which is what they're trying to protect here.
So the 9/11 Commission recommends this. The Congress passes it. It's signed into law by President Bush back in 2005. I've literally been covering Real ID for almost my entire journalism career. What has taken so long? What obstacles have there been to actually making this a reality?
Well, it's unclear, simply because it's easy to find excuses that people use, and certainly the pandemic was a legitimate excuse. But if you look at each of the states,
say that was 15 years after it passed initially, so
absolutely,
there were other excuses before the pandemic.
There were many, many excuses. You know, are states prepared to do this? But if we look at each and every one of the states, they are prepared to provide real ideas. Everybody is ready to go. The only thing that is not ready to go is the willingness to just say, we're firm. Now, the airlines aren't going to be happy with this, because some people will try and fly without having a real ID, and they're going to be denied entry into the sterile part of the airport, which means that the airlines have to deal with people who are denied boarding, not by them, but by the TSA. So they can't be happy. It also comes down to immigration laws and reform, because this is all tied together. We like to think of it as being standalone issues, but there's so much leakage across so many different policies in government that the Real ID starts to touch upon immigration reform. It starts to bleed into, you know, personal privacy issues. And people start to say, I don't want to have to give that personal information about myself to the government. I just want to fly. And it becomes an issue that ultimately it takes just a few people in Congress to find a way to delay it again and again and again. And I am not even optimistic that in the 2025 date, we're going to be able to stick with it. You know, it really takes the will of the country to say, we're going to stick with this. We've already delayed it 18 years. Are we going to delay it another two after that, five, whatever it may be? I don't think that's a good idea, because otherwise, why do we even have the concept? Yeah, because the vast majority of people now already have one. That's the beauty of it. It's just a question of making the law hold and stick.
Yeah. All right. Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking with Sheldon Jacobson, who's a professor of computer science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and is an award-winning researcher for his work on airport security in particular. All right. So you mentioned that a majority of people have this? What has the uptake been like? Illinois has had Real ID. I mentioned I got one. My wife got one a few years ago. It wasn't that big a deal. Of course, we have, you know, we're fairly financially secure, so we have access to these documents and that sort of thing. But what has the uptake been like?
Every state now is in a position to provide them. So in fact, we don't have the specific statistics in terms of the uptake, but because it is so readily available that ultimately anybody who wants it can have it. The real question is, do people want to have one? And that is something that it doesn't cost any more than a driver's license. It's the same cost, but it is quite ubiquitous that people do have real IDs. And in fact, for many people, they don't even think about it anymore because it's so part of what they've already done because of the campaigns that were set up with the deadlines in 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. Everybody was preparing for it. It's been a rather quiet period now because the deadline was recently delayed and we now have another couple of years. At some point, it will reach, you know, the critical point of attention again. And once again, the airlines mention it, TSA mentions it, but will it be, there be enough people who will say, no, we have to wait more? There's no reason to wait anymore. Every state, every territory is already prepared to provide them. It's a question of people being informed that this is in their best interest and being willing to take part and get a real ID.
Do you anticipate another rush, sort of last second in, you know, May 2025, or maybe people being turned away, assuming there's not another postponement?
Well, I think by this time, most people who want to have one have one. And the people who don't want to have them, I don't think are going to get one. So we're at that point that you're either having one now or you don't have one. And the question then becomes, how will the airlines deal with it? The other question is, what else can we use a real ID for? Should we use it in the banking industry, in the private sector? This is a big question that has to be put forward because it does validate who you are. If anybody has been subject to fraud at a bank where someone has impersonated them and went to a bank and stolen their ID and withdrew money, with a real ID, it's not that easy to do because the technology and the process of getting them is much more than what we do for a regular driver's license. So I don't think we're going to have the mad rush we saw before. I think there will be a lot more advertisement and discussion. But in terms of the actual rush, the people who have them and want to have them. And the people who don't want to have them, I don't think they're ever going to have them, but then they won't be able to fly. And that will be interesting. And that, in fact, that's going to be an episode of itself for your program.
Yeah. All right. Last question. If somebody is convinced by our conversation today, they want to get a real ID, what do they need to know?
Well, you can go to the Secretary of State website. It gives you a simple list to go through of what documentation you need. And when you renew your driver's license, typically, you know, we renew it every 4 years, certainly. But the next time you renew it, if you don't have one, just bring in that documentation. Don't make any changes to it. And then after you provide it all, pay your fee, you have to wait a couple of weeks. I think it's 15 days, although it usually does arrive earlier than that, and you'll get a real ID, and you can get into any federal facility in the United States. You can get on any airplane. You can do all the things that you're doing right now, but then you can do them after the Real ID Act is enforced.
Sheldon Jacobson is a professor of computer science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
Next time on the 21st Show, we'll talk with Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. As chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he's been outspoken about some of the ethical questions around the U.S. Supreme Court, particularly some expensive gifts bought for Justice Clarence Thomas. Plus, we'll talk with Ninja Warrior competitors, current and former, from Illinois about the growing popularity of that sport and how you or your children can get involved if you're interested in that. You can find out more about our programs on our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can contact us. We've got our email address, our voicemail number. It's all on our website, 21stshow.org. You can also find links to our podcast or just look us up on Apple or Spotify or anywhere else you get your podcasts. Just search for The 21st Show. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our intern is Owen Henderson. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.